But still, I don't think that march for science was really for science. It was for silence. Fact is, if you hold any view critical of climate dogma, you will be smeared.
I think this is a brilliant solution. If your science gives you a result that you don't like, pass a law saying that the result is illegal. Problem solved.
But our numbers here today show the world that science is for all. Our lawmakers must know and accept that science serves every one of us.
But without some common baseline of facts, without a willingness to admit new information and concede that your opponent might be making a fair point and that science and reason matter, then we're going to keep talking past each other and we'll make common ground and compromise impossible.
I'm your host, Kai Brito, and this is Perpetual Notion Machine. Earlier this year, on April 22nd, Earth Day, protesters at the Wisconsin State Capitol stood in solidarity with scientists across the world in support of nonpartisan scientific education and research. The Madison March for Science was inspired by the country's current political climate and what protest organizers see as a disconnect between science, lawmakers, and the public. Some scientists view this march as a way to oppose President Trump's budget cuts to scientific organizations, while others wanted to speak to the public and emphasize the benefits of science for society. However, there was still some internal debate as to whether this would be the best way to secure funding for scientific research. This week, we're discussing the recent March for Science with scientists, science communicators, and the March for Science coordinators to get to the core issues of science's role in politics and society. I spoke with two of the coordinators for the March for Science, David Lovelace and Valerie Grover, and asked them about their roles in planning this march.
It was just after the inauguration when the first executive orders came about with regards to National Park Service, EPA, things of that nature. There was a March for Science thread that sprung up on Reddit. There was a Facebook group that started, and there was also a Twitter that started. I was watching Facebook and Twitter and kept waiting for someone to say, let's do this in Wisconsin. You saw all other states jumping in. Anyone doing this in Massachusetts? Anyone doing this in New York? I kept waiting for Wisconsin. I waited 3-4 days. I didn't see anything. I'm like, I'm starting a Wisconsin Twitter.
So you're the one that started it all. Are you the origin?
Nope. It was actually, I think, 3 or 4 of us were doing this concurrently.
I'm trying to it was so quick to come together. And yep. We had all hesitated, waiting for leadership, waiting for guidance, and not wanting, personally, to see it commercialized, wanting to keep my personal foot in the door. This is something that I wanted to see happen. I wanted to see advocacy for facts in this methodology.
Why did you personally choose to invest your time into this? You said it took so many hours and it took over this 3-time planning thing and it was almost a second full-time job. So why did you feel compelled to do this?
I think it goes back to Seuss, and the Lorax. You know, unless someone cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. And as a person, I felt compelled to speak out for science and advocate for just the scientific method. Let's keep the integrity. That is a value in my little family unit. And in that, I didn't walk into the into the arena thinking that it was going to take more than maybe 3 hours a week. I was hoping to keep the conversation going as well as pass the baton and see it unfold.
Sure. I actually got into this for slightly selfish reasons. As I mentioned to you, I'm involved in clinical research and medical data. My fear when the when the initial rumblings began that climate research was going to be defunded, that the EPA was going to go bankrupt, I thought, what's next? Is the CDC next? Is the National Institutes of Health next? Is the FDA safe? Those are things that matter to me and make my job possible. I rely on those data sources daily. And if they go away, if they're no longer available to me, that's something that's not only going to affect my livelihood, but has the potential to affect any of the people, any of the patients, any of the members that I work to benefit. I got into it for selfish reasons. I admit that now. However, I will echo Val's sentiment that this turned into a Dr. Seuss type of adventure. And even this morning, I saw an article that I tweeted out, the headline of which was, "If you don't do it, who will?" And I think that's something that I've come to expect. Many of us anticipate or hope that someone else will speak out and stand up for the things that we feel are important. And this 3 month adventure has taught me that if it's important to me, I need to stand up and I need to take a stand on that. So I am now making a point to vote in every single primary election of every level, every magnitude. I am making a point to donate to political and apolitical causes that I believe in. And I think my lesson from this is not to be silent anymore.
So how much extra time outside of your like day-to-day jobs did this require? Well, how much of a time investment did you pour into organizing this event?
Wow. Yes, I could say that this was a full-time effort.
It is the epitome of a grassroots effort in a lot of ways.
It really was morning, noon, night, weekends, just constantly staying connected with the pulse so that we could stay abreast of what was going on at the national level, as well as what our regional, from Great Lake concerns all the way down to this municipal level of what does the community of Madison and greater Wisconsin want to accomplish. And
we had national direction. We had national guidelines, if you will, but we were very much free to define what the march would be at a local level and how or if we would interact with other groups.
So we were speaking with other groups in the area who had shown interest. We found it somewhat challenging to hold on to leadership from area allies because our core objective was slightly different, and that did bring us about 3 to 4 weeks behind schedule trying to build these bridges and then realizing that we also needed to build ourselves.
Yeah, when you say build these bridges, with what organizations specifically? Are you speaking of the national branch, or are there other people that you'd like to mention?
It's the elephant in the room. Go ahead and talk about it.
Oh,
As you're well aware, there was a separate march that occurred.
Right. I was going to ask that as a follow-up. Sure. I wondered if there were some other things, but I was going to ask about the Madison People's Climate Movement.
It's a good segue. Let's go ahead and get into there now. We spent, from the early, early days, there were representatives of the People's Climate March at the table with us. We did spend weeks trying to find not only common ground ideologically, but also common ground politically and common ground organizationally. There were particular things and goals that the People's Climate March wished to accomplish that ultimately we felt didn't fit as well with the national objectives and the nonpartisan approach that we had chosen to adopt from national. One of those was the focus on MG&E. We did consult with National on this multiple times and got input from a variety of other satellite marches and from national organizers as well. They said ultimately to follow our instinct, but it does sound like something that could easily polarize a community. Mm-hmm. And that is why we basically decided that we were not marching to MG&E. We were not going to focus on one particular organization, and that caused almost a reorganization of the march into two different marches. Mm-hmm. At mid to late February.
Yes.
So we started from scratch again in the middle to the latter part of February. Mm-hmm. So when you ask if 3 weeks or 3 months was enough time, probably it would have been. I think we all felt a little bit of a time pressure, especially during March when we were trying to scrape together and pull what we could in terms of organizing our march instead of a merged march together.
It seemed that there were higher numbers in attendance for the March for Science, at least according to the estimates for the City of Madison Police Department. If you could offer me why you think climate scientists or people that supported climate science may have seemed to support the March for Science more likely than the People's Climate March, is there some reason you can think of or even speculation?
I think that there was confusion. we had a lot of we had many, many questions as to why are we not merging, and is this climate, is this science, what's the intersectionality? And really the crux of it was it's a date. And on April 22nd,
it's Earth Day.
It's Earth Day, and also a national, international March for Science. April 29th is the People's Climate March.
Right.
So it was a challenge to differentiate the two because there is overlap, and a lot of our national partners and endorsements were for both. We actively promoted the People's Climate March. 350.org endorsed us. So there was some conflict. There was some turf war, so to speak, in that we requested clarification on who was the
who would be the coordinator of not only the speakers, but of what the core message of the march would be? Would that be?
That's exactly what we're trying. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. We wanted a official position or objectives from the People's Climate March. And after much research and dialogue and checking around, the People's Climate March for Madison was not a national satellite or sister.
This is solely my own opinion. I have nothing to back this up. It is bad science, in short. I have no research. I have no citations. My feeling is that because March for Science is not solely climate, we are not just climatology, we are not just climate change, there's a much broader applicability there. There is medical research, there is healthcare, there is social justice, there's the entire realm of the social sciences. We had psychology reps speak at the march. Those are areas that appeal to a much broader base than solely climate change does. And because of that, we had more people interested, more people who felt motivated and empowered, if you will, to attend this versus a climate march.
And the other thing that I'd like to bring up is that perhaps some people might find climate change, because it's become a politicized issue, such a highly politicized issue ever since 2000. Do you think that played a role in numbers?
So science is innate to human curiosity, this whole experience that we're sharing. It's asking questions. I mean, the fundamentals of science reach and impact absolutely everyone. So the intersectionality of our theme was that, you know, we're doing this for science and we're doing this for humanity. Science isn't just a lab coat and a petri dish. It is your GPS signal getting you to a certain location. It is having your heart rate monitored if you're going into arrest. Whatever it may be, we're directly impacted through it.
Val isn't the only scientist that shares this belief.
At the March for Science, I met up with a University of Wisconsin-Madison graduate student that studies the effects of air quality on bird populations. Her name is Olivia Sanderfoot, and she cares deeply about both science and the environment. And while we're describing her, I want to throw in a disclaimer that I've met her before in a class once, but we haven't kept much correspondence since. That is until I learned about how she took her passion for science in the upcoming days to the march and channeled it into a spoken word piece titled Why I March. Here's why she wrote it.
I felt it was important to express why I feel that science is important and why it should be valued, and add that emotional side of science back into the discussion. And I wrote a spoken word piece about what science has done for me. When I was 16, I was diagnosed with pneumonia, and I was homesick for almost a month. And it was only through scientific innovation and medical treatment that I got better. And that's a disease that decades ago might have actually killed me. So I wanted to put that in the piece. And in 2015, my father attempted suicide. And that was a very important and somewhat traumatic moment for me, and certainly a historical moment for me in my own lifetime. And I wanted to put that in there because it was only through scientific discovery and innovation and achievement that his life was saved. And there are so many other reasons to support science, from healthcare to medicine to public health to the environment. We need to know what the problems are in the world and know everything about them in order to come up with solutions. And I wanted to share how, in my life, those solutions have made me a better person and saved people that I love. And I wanted to express that.
I march for the computer programmers who invented short message service, because when my dad decided to take his own life, I instantly received his last text message. And I marched for Alexander Graham Bell, the man who invented the telephone, because when I read, "I love you, sweetie, goodbye," I could call 911. And I marched for the geographers who create maps and the software developers working at Google, because when the 911 operator asked me what my dad's address was, it, in my hysterical panic, I could not remember where he lived. She used Google Maps to find him. And I marched for Heinrich Hertz, who discovered radio waves, because without radio communication, the police would not have arrived at my dad's home in time. And I marched for the emergency medical team that rescued him, and the nurses who cared for him, and the doctors who did not give up. I march for the science that saved my father's life.
This was an excerpt from Olivia's spoken word piece titled Why I March. The whole piece is available on YouTube. We've been discussing a lot of the philosophy behind the march, but not a lot about the effectiveness of it. Because not every scientist agrees that there should have been a march for science. Some scientists believe that participating in a march would associate them with identities behind the other marches and serve to only further polarize the conversation about scientific research. UW-Madison professors of life science communication, Dominique Brassard and Dietram Schaeffele, say that what matters most is the public perception, and the March for Science failed on that front.
I think there were many people at the march who were trying to be as nonpartisan as they as individuals could be. But the question in many ways is not, were people there here and there, were they nonpartisan? But the question is, what was the perception that an outside viewer got of the march?
We worked so hard to make this a nonpartisan event. We actually turned down at least one speaker who would have brought too much of a blue flavor to our speaker lineup. For the sole reason that we did not want to make this a Democratic march. We did not want to make this an anti-Republican march. We wanted to appeal to the commonalities that exist among all voters, all humans, that there are benefits from science that we all need. We all need clean air. We all need drinkable water. We all need farmable earth. It doesn't matter who you vote for. These are universal needs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the perception that an outside viewer got of the march was one of what were the most interesting signs, right? And the most interesting signs were the ones that were partisan, that were seeking conflict, that were talking about keep your grubby little hands away from my data, that talked about climate change, that talked about a lot of the issues that have been, from a partisan perspective, deeply divisive and are at odds with policies of the current administration.
Yeah, there's your free speech
exactly.
There. We are only going to provide the parameters for what we, as an organizing committee, are setting out to do. We are setting up this event with speakers that we've vetted at venues. We're going by the books here. And anything beyond that is conversation.
Yep.
And we need to start there.
I did not feel comfortable having any sort of guidelines on what people could and could not have on their signs. We took a risk there. Who knows what people could have shown up with? And there were some interesting signs. However, it is not our march. We organized the route. We organized the speakers and the people who showed up on that march. And those are their thoughts and those are their feelings and opinions. And I support them having an opportunity to make those heard.
So even though individuals may have felt that they were nonpartisan and that their intent was to be nonpartisan, and even though individuals may have been successful at doing that, I think collectively the perception was that this was at least in part an anti-Trump rally, very much in line with some of the other rallies that we've seen after he had been elected.
Yeah, and I would go further saying that, you know, like the problem that you have when you march or when you do any kind of communication activity, as Yitran was saying, is how will people perceive your communication activity. And I think the March for Science organizer were aware of the problems and of the difficulties in controlling a message when you have such a large turnout. I mean, I met several of them at AAAS, actually.
Now we'll go back to something that I said countless times in that 3-month period, is that this is not a march of scientists. This is a march for science. I saw so many people who were hardcore scientists. We saw the American Chemical Society. We saw numerous organizations that were hard science. We also saw people who care about the environment in which they live in, who had absolutely no scientific background. Mm-hmm. And that is, to me, that is even more important. That is the base that we wanted to appeal to, the base we wanted to build on. So to get back to your question about did the political flavor of this influence our turnout? Possibly. But the thing we avoided as much as possible was to make it a political rally, to make it something that only anti-Trump people would show up to, and that Walker supporters would go elsewhere. We wanted to make everyone welcome.
And they tried to actually control the message, but they felt to themselves make sure that what was sent as an overall message was nonpartisan. And the clear example of that is the type of speakers they chose, you know, the lineup for. I mean, how hard would that be to find some, you know, moderate Republican that actually give an example in how science engineering, for example, is useful for the average American? And I don't think they really did that. And to some extent, I think it's a missed opportunity in that regard.
We were just like, whoa, we would love to have this individual speak. This is very, very powerful, but also polarizing. And
right.
We would need to temper the tone as advocacy.
And the flip side of things, we did not have a counterpoint to balance the speaker out.
Yes.
If we had had a similar red end of the spectrum to counterbalance or even to complement the speaker, mm-hmm. I would have been completely comfortable with those two people on the stage. Mm-hmm. However, as it was, with only having the blue side of things, it wasn't a universally accepted perspective.
Whether the March for Science was effective or not still remains a question. But the coordinators still hold hope for science in the coming days.
Jeff coined a phrase a couple of days ago, science agnostic.
Discipline agnostic.
Oh,
discipline
sorry.
Agnostic. Okay. I was like, did I say that?
But I think that's something that is very, very interesting. And as humans, we need to recognize that we don't know. We know that we don't know. So putting down our ego and allowing more information to transpire. So for the future of science, I would like to see... God. I would like to see a science caucus. I know that was one area that we were looking at, how from a state or a national level can we continue? And there needs to be perhaps a clearinghouse, a way that we can inform our leadership of how it affects us economically, how our public health is affected, and our environment.
Join us next week for another edition of Perpetual Notion Machine. I'm Kai Brito.
Loud, sound just like a soul encounter, cruising for some barbecue.